As Kath has alluded to, we are starting a new series this morning. We're starting a new series about what it means to be a disciple, what it means to be a follower of Jesus, and some of the consequences of that. And I just want to explain why we're doing that. It's something I've been thinking about for a long time, certainly this year, and maybe a bit before that. Something I spoke about briefly in the morning service on Sunday the 22nd of July, if you were here. And I am convinced that this is a really important topic for us to be thinking about. Because as we heard in our reading that Trevor wrote earlier, it's something that Jesus called his followers to be, and something that we have, in so many ways, managed to lose sight of. And as I talk to ministers around the country, I hear this time and time again, that we've lost this understanding of what Jesus was actually calling us to be and to do. And so we're going to be thinking about that over the next few months. If someone were to ask you a question this morning about your identity, about how you thought of yourself, you might have many different ways of answering that. In terms of relationships, I'm the wife of this person, I'm the daughter of that person, I'm the friend of this person. It might be to do with what you spend your time doing. It might be to do with how you spend your money. It might be to do with what you believe. Many different ways we can think about our identity. And as we heard those answers, it would give us some idea of the sort of person you were and the sort of things that were important to you. But how much do we see our identity fundamentally defined by being a disciple of Jesus? Or how much do we see our belief in Jesus just being an add-on to the life that we carve out for ourselves? How different are our lives from those who have no thought for Jesus at all? Those are some of the things we're going to explore. And as I've been thinking about this series, I've been challenged by some of the things that Jesus clearly demands from his followers in terms of who they are and what they are to do. And I hope as we explore this together, we will all be challenged as to the extent of the reality of our commitment to Jesus. And if we hear Jesus calling us again, if we hear Jesus calling us to change, then we will be willing and ready to respond. To help keep track of where we are, where we're going, we've got a booklet. Hopefully you were all given one as you came in. If not, please pick one up on the way out. And there's an overview of what we'll be doing at the beginning. Then for each week, there's the passage and theme we'll be thinking about. There's some questions to think through, and some practical things to do in response. I want to thank Jo for the work she's done in putting this together. And one of the reasons we've done this is because this being disciples, making disciples, it's not just having a better understanding of what we're supposed to be, but actually putting it into practice. Today and tomorrow and this week and next week and so on. For this to change our lives. So please take one of these, put your name on it, think about it, reflect on it, talk about it, share it with others. Great things to talk about in small groups, house groups that meet during the week. If you're not part of one and want to be part of one to get the most out of this, then there's these cards available, which we talked about a few weeks ago. Fill one in, get it back to me, and we can sort you out with a group. So that's what we're doing over the next few weeks. And I think this is so important. We're doing the same thing in the evening. Evening services start up again this evening. We're going to be looking at the same topic from a slightly different perspective. So please come along and be part of that as well. So that's what we are doing. In the morning, we'll be looking at different passages from the Gospels, those first four books in the New Testament, and they give us different insights into what it means to be a follower of Jesus and how this should guide and direct what we do. And this morning, we're starting at the end of the story, and we're seeing as Trevor read to us, what Jesus says to his followers just before he goes back to heaven, after going through death on the cross and being brought back to life. He comes to them and he has some words for them. And this is what he says. He says, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. He gives them a job to do, to go and make disciples. And the people to whom he gave this job are identified in verse 16 as disciples. So that's who they were, and that's what they were supposed to do. So who were these disciples? It's worth thinking about who these people were for just a moment. Because they were ordinary people whom Jesus had met when they were doing a range of things. They were doing lots of different jobs in lots of different contexts. They had lots of different ideas, lots of things that were important to them. And Jesus had come to them and he called them to follow him. And over the next few weeks, we'll look at some of what that involved. People changing their entire focus of life from what they were involved in, from fishing or from collecting taxes or whatever it was, to be a follower of Jesus. And it meant different things for each of them. But they had made that commitment to be a disciple. And that carries with it some deep and significant ideas. It's about learning from a teacher. It's about spending time with a leader. It's about being obedient to a master. These are some of the concepts tied up in that word. They had willingly submitted themselves to his authority. They had taken on board his ideas. They had left everything else behind to be with him. And it is those people whom Jesus had told to go and meet him on a specific mountain in Galilee, towards the north of the country. They knew that Jesus had died. They heard that he'd been restored to life, even if they had no idea how that could have happened. And suddenly, they realised that he's so much more than they had previously understood. And so, as obedient disciples, they went as they'd been commanded, and in verse 17, they see Jesus. We've got these four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke and John, and they all tell the story of Jesus, the life of Jesus, slightly differently. And in the other Gospels, we find the disciples meet up with Jesus in Jerusalem. But Matthew tells the story that the first time they meet up with Jesus after the resurrection is on this mountain in Galilee. And their response is to worship him, to recognise something of his greatness, to recognise the amazing thing that had happened, to show him the honour he deserved. But in the midst of that, we find some of them doubting. When they saw him, it says they worshipped him, but some doubted. The only other time we find this word doubting in the New Testament is when Peter, one of his disciples, was on a boat with the rest of them, and they suddenly saw Jesus walking on top of the water towards them, which was a bit of a shock. And Peter thought, I want a part of that. So he said to Jesus, Lord, if it's really you, tell me to come to you. And Jesus invited him to get out of the boat and to get onto the water and to start walking towards him. And amazingly, because of his trust in Jesus, he did. And he started walking and everything was fine. And suddenly he realised that actually there was a bit of wind about and there was a lot of waves and water isn't a very stable thing to be walking on. And he started to sink. He doubted. He no longer had confidence in Jesus. What were they doubting? What was holding them back? It's unlikely they were struggling to believe that this was Jesus. They'd had a few days to get used to the idea that he'd come back to life, and they were worshipping him. Maybe it was more about how they should approach such a person. Someone who by his death and resurrection had demonstrated that he was so much greater than anyone they had ever met. Maybe it was about how they would be received by him. After all, when he was arrested, they'd run away. They hadn't been prepared to stay with him. How would he receive them now? We don't know what was holding them back. We don't know what was causing them concern. But into that situation, verse 18 tells us that Jesus came to them. And I find this idea of Jesus coming up close to the disciples is so powerful and so reassuring. They are hesitating. They don't know how to approach him for whatever reason. And he graciously and lovingly comes to them. There are three other occurrences where Jesus comes to people in the Gospels, the same verb. There's a time when he is on a mountain with three of his close disciples, including Peter again. And suddenly he's transformed and he demonstrates the glory that was always his. And these three disciples, they are terrified. They fall down on the ground. And Jesus comes to them and says, "Don't be afraid." Early in the story of the relationship with them, again, it's Peter. He seems to crop up everywhere. But this time it was his mother-in-law who wasn't well. And he comes and heals her. There's a time when he's walking and he sees a funeral procession and raises the person who's dead to life. He comes. He brings comfort. He brings reassurance. He brings healing. He brings life. And here, Jesus comes. He draws close. He speaks to them. To those who hesitated. To those who doubted. To those who, in some way, were allowing their thoughts and their fears and their uncertainties to get in the way of their relationship with Jesus. Friends, this morning, is there something that is causing you to hesitate in coming to Jesus, in holding you back from recognizing who he is, from worshiping him as he deserves? Whatever it is, it is not enough to stop Jesus from wanting to meet with you, to engage with you, to restore full relationship with you. Are you going to allow that to happen? And having come to them, Jesus speaks to them. There are many things Jesus could have said. He could have tried to convince them of the reality of what had happened. Yes, I died on that cross, but I am alive. He could have tried maybe to encourage them. Say, "I know we've had a rough few days, but it's all going to be okay." He could have pointed out their failings. "Where were you when I needed you? You need to be forgiven for the way in which you let me down." He could have done those or other things, but he does none of those things. But what he does is incredibly powerful and important. He speaks about ultimate authority. "All authority," he says, "in heaven and on earth has been given to me." And if ultimate authority is his, it does not belong to anyone else. You can't have two people at the top. Many of us today have a problem with authority. We like to think of ourselves as free people, able to make our own decisions and our own choices in life. We treasure freedom of speech and expression and the ability to go where we want without having to ask permission. And authority can be seen as trying to stop us doing the things we want to do. But even as we like to think of ourselves as free agents, we do find ourselves under authority. We're under the authority of the police as they enforce the laws of the land. We are under the laws of our country. If we don't obey them, we get into trouble. When we're growing up, we're under the authority of our parents. When we're at work, we're under the authority of our bosses, and so forth. Some of those are consequence of the choices we make. We work for a particular company, therefore we're responsible to this boss or that one. Others are consequence simply of being part of this society and the way this society has decided to govern itself. But the power of all those authorities is limited. Until Jesus comes and says that all authority has been given to him. And we submit to the laws of our land. Surely we should submit to Jesus. And so we come and think about this one who has had all authority given to him and think about what he asks us and commands us and tells us to do, and we find that he says, I want you to go and make disciples. You've chosen to follow me. I want you to go and get others to follow me as well. Therefore, he says, go. From that place of ultimate authority to people who recognize his claims on their life, Jesus gives the disciples a job to do. It is not to go and live any sort of life we want. It is not to go and make people feel good. It is not to encourage people to come to church. It is not even to get people to believe in Jesus. It's to make more disciples. That's what Jesus calls us to do. And I am convinced that many Christians today in this country have forgotten or choose to ignore the fact that this is the job that Jesus has given us, to go and make disciples. And as I was thinking about this, I think there are at least three types of people with a relationship with Jesus. There are believers, there are disciples, and there are disciples who make disciples. And these things I'm saying that a believer is someone who's come to recognise something of who Jesus is. Someone who realises that they have done things wrong, that they are guilty before God. Someone who knows the only way of putting things right is through believing in Jesus and accepting the forgiveness and new life he offers. And please don't hear me wrong. This is hugely important and vital. This is where we each need to get to, or at least to start. To recognise that we each have failed and messed up and gone against God's plans and purposes. To turn to Jesus, to recognise what he can do, to ask him for his forgiveness. To move from being under the judgment of God to experience his forgiveness. To have that guarantee and certainty of a new, a transformed life, a life that will go on forever in his presence and with him. That is a wonderful state to be in. And if there are any there here this morning who haven't got to that point, then I'd please encourage you to respond to Jesus, to believe in him, to accept him, to join his community. But however wonderful that is, it's not where Jesus calls us to stop. We're supposed to grow from that place of new life. We're supposed to grow into discipleship. And I'm going to suggest that a disciple is someone who is a believer, someone who's come to that place and realises that this has to affect the way that he or she lives. That Jesus calls us to live differently, with a different set of values, to love God and our neighbour, and for that to influence all our relationships and how we engage with God and with people. To treat everything that we have, our time, our money, our abilities, as belonging to God and not to ourselves. And a disciple who goes and makes disciples is someone who signs up to all of those things, but is passionately committed to bringing other people into that same relationship with Jesus Christ as well. And some people get stuck, either by choice or by accident at different stages. They believe, they move from death to life, but it makes no real difference to how they live. Or they try to be a disciple and it does change their lives, but they don't see that they have any need to try and convince others as well. They think, this is about me and my relationship with God. But the more I think about it, the more I think that this second option, this being a disciple, is not a real option at all. If we're seeking to be a disciple, then the job is making disciples. And if we aren't involved in that, then we aren't really a disciple of Jesus at all. In the honesty of your own thoughts and before God, which group would you see yourself in this morning? And if you're in one of the first two groups, Are you happy with that? Or do you believe that Jesus is calling you to go and make disciples? And if so, how are you going to respond? For each of us, how that works will be out in practice will be different. We have different personalities. God has given us different gifts. But we are all called to be in the disciple-making business. As Kath alluded to earlier, this is a difficult job. We can't do it unless we are committed to Jesus, unless we have made that decision to follow him. And even then, it's a difficult job. Because we're not just to encourage people to believe in Jesus, but we're to make disciples. And as we have seen, this involves encouraging them to be in the discipleship-making process as well. So we're not just called to introduce people to Jesus and for them to come to believe in him and to accept him for their Saviour and Lord. That is something we need to be doing. But we are called to encourage those people to commit their lives to Jesus, to allow their lives to be changed, and to get involved in making other disciples as well. And we do this, apparently, according to Jesus, by teaching them to obey everything Jesus has commanded us. You know, he gives us some guidelines. Go and make disciples, baptizing them and teaching them. And I think this call to teach them to be obedient to everything that Jesus has commanded, has at least three implications for us. We need to be familiar with what Jesus taught. The Gospels are full of the words, of the commands, of the insight, of the teaching of Jesus. We need to know what he says. We need to be obedient to it. We need to be living that life. Otherwise, our words to others won't mean much at all. And we need to be speaking to those we want to introduce to Jesus about the importance of themselves being obedient to him. Being a disciple is not easy. It involves giving authority over our lives to someone else. It involves seeking to live according to the words of Jesus. It involves living by God's values and not our own. Doing the work of a disciple is not easy. It involves speaking with others about Jesus. It involves demonstrating the value of coming to know him for themselves. It involves teaching people how Jesus wants them to live. It's hard work. But if we are serious about following Jesus, if the faith we profess is to have any meaning in the world we are part of, then this is the role we are called to take on. This is the job we are called to do. Over the next few weeks, we're going to be exploring a bit more of what that means. We're going to be looking at a couple of examples of Jesus calling people to follow him. We'll be looking at some of the difficulties and the challenges. We're going to be looking at some of the heavy demands that Jesus calls on his followers. We'll be asking whether we need to come to that place of recommitment to follow Jesus. But that's over the next few weeks. This morning, I just want to leave you with a question. What change would it mean for you to be a disciple-making disciple this week? Not just somebody who believes in Jesus, though believing in Jesus is a wonderful thing. But what would it mean for you tomorrow or Wednesday or Thursday evening or whatever to be totally committed this week to being a fully committed follower of Jesus with a passionate desire to draw other people into that same relationship as well? Are we going to be obedient to the call of Jesus to make disciples? Let's pray.